Good morning and welcome to the Communication Corner on WBCX 89.1 FM, the voice of Brunel. Brunel University, that is. I'm your host, Dr. Bill Lampton, with my very highly capable co-host, Christina Rhodes. Christina, good morning.
Good morning, Bill. How are you this morning?
Well, I'm not celebrating as much as you are. A special day for you.
It is. My husband and I, my best friend and I, are celebrating our third wedding anniversary today.
Hey, wouldn't it be great if everybody could say that their mate is their best friend? That the world would change entirely. Happy third anniversary and many more happy ones for you to go. One thing I was thinking is that this time next year, there will be someone else to help celebrate your anniversary.
We will. We'll have a little family by this time next year. And I'm not just talking about the dogs.
No, you got two dogs, but there's a child that will be joining.
Yes,
you.
I'm about 3.5 months pregnant now and just as happy as we could be. It's just amazing time in our lives, and we're so excited to embark on this journey.
All of your WBCX staff members, colleagues, faculty members, students, friends, and our listeners and your listeners on your two programs, join me in congratulating you on your anniversary and on the child to be.
Thank you so much, Bill.
You know, today we're going to be talking with Dr. Bill Lightfoot. Our topic is going to be, what are the trends and the most important happenings in higher education? And he's certainly a great resource for us. Christina, as we know, higher education has many advantages. We often see studies that report the economic advantages, comparing the lifetime income of a person who gets a college degree with the lifetime income of a person who does not get that advantage. But you and I, both of us having completed certain levels of higher education, we have our own thoughts about, and we can take just a minute before we introduce Dr. Lightfoot, what would you say are the major advantages, other than economics, that you feel came to you because of your higher education experience?
Well, I imagine, Bill, that it's, you know, varies a little bit depending on the institution that you attended. Here at Brunel, there's an emphasis on global exposure and global understanding. And I really feel like that's something that I benefited from in my education here. I was exposed to different cultures and the way different cultures learn and do business. And as well as I got to be in classes with students from all around the world and got to interact with them and work in groups with them and really understand how they do things. And so I think that was really valuable and will help me be a better leader and a better person regardless of the career that I go into.
Well, what you just said, we've got the ideal guest to talk with us about that this morning. Because
we do.
He is Mr. Global Education, Dr. Global Education, we could call him. Anything else you'd like to add about your higher education experiences and the benefits?
You know, working in groups is definitely something. You know, working in professional groups, it's something that you often hear a lot of students go, oh, gosh, group work, that's so tough. But it's really valuable because the fact is that you will work in groups of people, whether it's today, maybe virtually or actually in person. But learning how to do that and work well with other people and see the value that other people add to projects you're doing, I think is also been really beneficial for me.
Even entrepreneurs who think that they're going it alone, they can't. They still are going to have to get networks and what one of our recent guests, Gina Carr, called tribes.
Right.
Well, for me, as I look back on my college experience, there are two or three things. And I went to a college very similar in nature to Brunel, small liberal arts college, Millsaps College, Jackson, Mississippi. 800 students at the time, 1,100 students now. There are a couple of things I would mention. One is that the college education experience taught me how to tackle difficult situations and topics that I just thought I couldn't handle. I had to learn to stick with them and get through them. My twin brother is a PhD in math and science. I got the other genes. So when I took the science courses, they were very, very difficult for me. And I learned this, again, is a great lesson for life. You get something you don't understand. You get something that's just not natural for you, but you stick with it and you go through it. A second thing for me with college, I think, was higher education, that it stimulated my curiosity forever.
Mm-hmm.
You go to college and you don't realize what a vast store of knowledge there is that you're not familiar with. So that's something good. And then the third thing I would say is that it really helped me as far as extracurricular involvement. I didn't do a lot in high school. I played on the golf team and I was on the newspaper staff. But in college, I was extremely active in extracurriculars, particularly dramatics. And that, of course, is one reason communication became the central focus of my life. Later on, from dramatics, I moved into public speaking. And you, of course, know how much I love radio. Anything else you'd like to add about higher education?
Oh, I just have to say I'm excited about today's interview because I've had the pleasure of working with Dean Lightfoot for about, gosh, how many years have you been here now? 4 years now we've been working together, and he's really been a mentor to me and I think done a great job leading this college. So it should be a fantastic interview this morning, Bill.
Well, let's move along and get then to our guest, Dr. Bill Lightfoot, Dean of the College of Business and Mass Communications at Brunel University. Welcome to the program, Dr. Lightfoot.
Thank you.
Really happy to have you here. One of the things that impresses me so much as I delved into your background and looked at your diverse activities across the globe and across different professions, one thing that really struck me is that you absolutely shatter the myth that anybody would have about a professor or an academic in administration being an ivory tower person who really has never done anything else. As you and I were chatting before the program this morning, you even gave me a new slant on your numerous activities where you talked about at one stage in your life, even after you had gotten your engineering degree, you became a full-time carpenter with your brother. Tell us a little bit about that experience and how that prepared you maybe even to be a more effective communicator and teacher and administrator.
Well, thank you, Bill and Christina. let me step back a little bit. I'll get into the carpentry stuff in a second. I started earning money and appreciating the value of hard work and money almost 40 years ago, around when I was 11 or 12 years old, and just started doing whatever I could to raise some money, not necessarily because I had any specific financial goal in mind. It was more a thing to do. And as soon as I started to do it, I really started to appreciate the value of earning money. And what I especially learned through that, thanks to my parents as well as some other folks growing up, was the value of hard work. The other thing I developed early on was a natural curiosity. And it came through the stories that aunts and uncles and other folks would tell me about their grand adventures traveling around the world, whether it was bird watching. I had one crazy aunt that bird watched a lot, or just the adventures of my grandparents who would go over to England, which is where their families were originally from, about every 3 years or so. And so that curiosity really has manifested itself in many different ways in my life. And especially in my working life. And I happen to come from a family of entrepreneurs. Both my dad as well as my older brother have successfully set up and run their own businesses for most of my adult life. And my older brother is a very, very creative, very talented carpenter. And when I was in high school, a couple of summers, I worked with him renovating properties. We didn't build houses at that point in time. But the first major project that we had was when he was 14 and we did an addition onto our house, and I was 12 years old, and I think I made the equivalent of 50 cents an hour. and was grateful for that, although it wasn't always a pleasure working for my older brother.
I remember when I was, as a teenager, making 35 cents an hour, and the boss came in one day and said my work had been so exemplary that he was raising me to 50 cents an hour, and I thought I'd hit the lottery.
Wow.
Back then, you probably did.
Right.
Well, with my brother, going into my senior year in high school, I worked for him for one summer, and that summer I actually managed to get four raises, a quarter an hour each, out of him. Of course, it came after four fights and four firings, but since he couldn't find other cheap employees, he kept coming back to me. But truthfully, what happened, the carpentry story, is that I went into, got my electrical engineering degree from Bucknell University in 1982, came out into a recessionary economy. Had a couple of job opportunities. One was to work in a steel mill that does not exist and pretty much failed within a year or so of 1982.
Good thing you didn't start there.
It's a good thing I didn't start there. And I ended up going to work for a company called Square D Company. Which is still around. They were absorbed in 1991 by a French firm called Schneider Electric. And my first time with Square D, I went through a training program to learn how to become a sales engineer. I'm not a natural salesperson by any stretch. And so it was a big challenge for me. My first job was posted to our field office that covered New York City and Long Island. And, you want to talk about probably one of the toughest markets in the world. I think it would have to be dealing with electrical contractors and other folks in New York City. They're brutal. And for a 21-year-old guy, it was a really, really good experience. Toughened me up in a lot of ways.
You heard no in every language and every accent.
And no, and I would come home and cuss more than my mom ever cared to hear me cuss. But that was the lingo. That was the way you did business. And it was a real challenge. And I had set a goal, though, after being there for about a year, that before I settled down, before I got my first big promotion and all those sort of things, anticipating that I hopefully would earn my way there, I decided I wanted to travel some more. I'd taken a trip to Europe after my senior year in college and some other shorter trips when I was in high school, and so really had my taste for travel. And I set a goal, ultimately, of backpacking around the world. And in order to accomplish that, I needed to earn a certain amount of money, and I also wanted to get my 2.5 to 3 years in my first job so that I had a base to build on when I came back from my travels. And
one thing important to point out here, I think, Dr. Lightfoot, is that you realized quite early that good things don't just happen. First of all, as you said, you learned the value of hard work growing up in a small town in Connecticut. And then you recognized as well that you've got to have a plan. It's okay to work hard. It's necessary. That's a great part of success. But every company, every entrepreneur, every group that has ever succeeded has had a plan, and you formulated one.
Absolutely, and that's exactly what I've done. And I'll loop back to a philosophy that's evolved out of that in a few minutes. I actually ended up talking a friend of mine from work into quitting the same day I did in February of 1985.
Oh, the boss must have appreciated that.
Oh, he was happy. And, I had done a pretty good job, so they actually kept the job open for me. But we took off. We headed off for Australia on April Fool's Day, 1985.
Appropriate
day. And two fools flew to first in New Zealand for a month and had an incredible month doing a lot of hiking and connecting in different ways.
New Zealand and Australia, these places are not exactly next door to us.
They're not. And it was just an incredible journey. And I ended up staying a bit longer. My friend had somehow met my sister in our preparation to travel, and he came back, got engaged to her, and they set a wedding date for October of 85, and that sort of became my next goal, was to get home in time for the wedding. So I also backpacked through Southeast Asia a little bit, Sri Lanka, Thailand, Malaysia. It was my second big adventure outside the U.S., but my first where, you know, really I was just exploring. I wasn't on a set path necessarily. I would go to one place, somebody would tell me about another place, and it was really eye-opening, mind-expanding. It was one of those incredible journeys that took me there.
Well, Let's get back to that in just a minute after Christina clues anybody who might have tuned in late where they are and who we're talking with today.
Listeners, you're tuned into the Communication Corner on WBCX 89.1 FM, The Voice of Brenau. WBCX broadcasts this very informative interview program on Tuesdays live at 9 a.m. with rebroadcast Thursdays at 6 a.m. Today, your host, Dr. Bill Lampton, is interviewing Dr. Bill Lightfoot, Dean of the College of Business and Mass Communication here at Brenau University. And let me remind you that the entire podcast of this interview will appear on Dr. Bill Lampton's blog later today, along with a photo of him with Dr. Lightfoot. The link to that blog is thecompletecommunicator.com.
Thank you, Christina. Gosh, two Dr. Bills here today.
I know. I'm getting a little tongue-tied over here.
No Dr. Phil yet, though.
No.
That's another network. All right. At what age were you becoming the perennial globetrotter? What age were you then?
Since I was 24.
24. Very venturesome. So you got back for your brother's wedding. Now, let's just jump forward a little bit to talk about the diverse career that you then developed before you became an academic.
Well, when I came back, I ended up ultimately working again for my older brother as a carpenter. And this time we built six different houses over a two-year period. My younger brother joined us for 1 year as well, so it was really a small family business. And you know, again, things started to dry up at the end of 2 years. By then, a young lady that I had met in Australia, she's from Virginia, Karen, my wife and my partner and my best friend as well, we decided to get married also. So that meant that instead of living week to week, paycheck to paycheck, as I was doing as a carpenter in the Northeast, where it gets really cold and you don't always have guaranteed work all the time.
No, I would think not.
You know, I decided that I needed to get back into my sales engineering mode, where I had a more steady income stream and more upward opportunity. She was a CPA, but at the time we got together, she was a bartender. So we got together, we decided to get married, and that set us in motion to get back into our careers. She is a CPA and myself as a sales engineer. When I went in as a sales engineer, I took an opportunity in Boston. It was in what I call high-tech industrial controls, factory automation, if you're familiar with that, or motion controls, if you're familiar with that, and took over a territory that needed some work. I've been very lucky in my career to have been thrown many challenges early on where, quite honestly, it was not maintenance situations. Instead, it was development situations. And that, you know, that really required somebody who was willing to work hard and try and figure things out. And that's what goes back to my early roots of being taught the value of a good work ethic,
mm-hmm.
is that if you put in a lot of extra hours, it usually will pay off. And I won't claim to be a rocket science or have figured anything else out, but I will say that, you know, one of the things we try to get across to our students here is you got to put in the time.
One of the factors that I think is important for people who are starting out in the business world after they leave Brenau or any other college is to recognize that the standard which people held to for a very long time was that a 40-hour week was it. That might be it if you want to stay at one very, very low level for a long time. I was quoting recently on the program Kemmons Wilson, the founder of Holiday Inn, who said that it's great to be an entrepreneur. It's great to work for yourself because you only have to work a half day. And somebody said, oh, really? And he said, yes. And you can choose the first 12 hours.
Exactly.
Or the second 12 hours. I don't know many successful people who are clock watchers. They're goal watchers, as you say.
Yeah, you have to consider, you know, there's 168 hours every week. And the question I always have is, how are you going to use them? You know, if you take three or four for sleep and one or two for socializing or whatever. But, you know, but seriously, you can't be a clock watcher. And the adage that I referred to earlier that I've learned through my life is you have to prepare to be lucky. And what I mean by that is you've got to have some high goals. You have to have some grand visions. You have to have dreams, things that you can realize, but not without preparation.
On your Facebook page, you say one of your favorite quotations is Louis Pasteur, chance favors the prepared mind.
Absolutely. And essentially to expand on that, you know, what I've learned is education is critical, and it's not just the kind of education we deliver through degree programs at Brunel University. It's the kind of education that comes with being curious. It's the kind of education that comes with uncertainty, with stretching yourself, with trying to do things that people have told you, you can't do that, you know. And so it's a combination of formal and informal education that sometimes takes you laterally in your career, sometimes it takes you upward, sometimes it even takes you a step back. But at the end of the day, if you hold on to that dream, then when that opportunity comes your way, one, you're going to recognize it, and two, you're going to be prepared to take it. And you're not going to look back. You're going to continue to look forward. And I've had that happen a number of times in my life and my career, and I just feel that, you know, you're the one that's responsible for deciding what goals are most critical and important to you and what visions and dreams are most important and critical to you, and then it's up to you to put it in place. And you'll find three types of people. You'll find people that are negative. Oh, you shouldn't do that. You have a nice job. You'll find people that are passively negative. That's nice, dear. And then they flip the page and move on to the next thing. And then you find people that are like, man, that's awesome. Go for it. It's the third category that you really want to latch on to. And even if it's just one other person that inspires you and fires you up and shares the crazy notion, because it often will come across as a crazy notion of whatever your dream is, that's the one you're going to get energy from, and that's the one that's going to offer support and advice to.
If you hang around naysayers, you're not going to accomplish very much. They'll rub off on you.
I often will tell the students, especially the MBA students, when they the first day that they come to campus, that I essentially now look at everybody through one lens, and that's an energy lens. And it's I look to people as either a positive or negative source of energy. If they're a positive source of energy, then I'm naturally attracted to that person. I want to help them. I want them to be successful. If they're negative, I don't want anything to do with them. And that's something I've learned, you know, half a century on the planet. I guess I, you know, a few things that I've learned, but that's how I kind of look at things in my life.
One of our guests recently, Ricky Steele, who may be one of the most successful networkers and business builders that I've ever met, said essentially the same thing when he was on the program. He says, when I go to a networking function, I have to recognize rather quickly the people that I can't spend a lot of time with, and I have to identify those who that I can, people that I can spend time with. Is this being snobbish? No. It's being selective, and it's sticking with your goal. Well, capsuling your career up until higher education, you had, what, about 15 years of full-time work before you got into education, right?
Yeah, 15 years of full-time work, 82 to 97, 98 roughly. About 11 of those years was large multinationals, Schneider Electric, Square D, Eaton Corporation. I had about 3 or 4 years that were in more entrepreneurial ventures, either the small business that my brother had or working for Silicon Valley startup for a good part of a year. And then I had a year where I was actually consulting to a Taiwanese company, publishing market research studies with another consultant, and also starting to do some teaching. And that was what set up my pathway into higher education back in 1998.
Let's look at higher education specifically now, thinking of your wonderful background, which prepared you to be, as I've said, you're not an ivory tower person at all. One of the things that I'd like for us to observe for a minute is how higher education is changing. When I was in college, and possibly when you were in college, it was very standard for a person to begin their college education as soon as they finished high school, to go 4 consecutive years, to get their degree then Anyone who didn't get their degree then, in my generation, it was rather unlikely that they would come back. Well, one of the things that has changed so much is the average age of the college student. Looking at Brunel University and looking nationally, what might the average age of the college student be now?
Well, the average age of the student population today may not sound so old. It's about 26, 27 years old. But what you have to look at is how that average age is made up. You know, what are the trends? And what you see is roughly 38 to 40% of all students that are in college today are over the age of 26. In fact, you have students that are into their 50s and 60s. And I know when I was going for my PhD, one of the inspirational people in our class was 84.
Yes, and I remember when I was vice president at Kentucky Wesleyan College in Owensboro, Kentucky. One of the most inspiring stories I remember, we had a lady who was 84 years old. And so I recall, of course, it snowed a good bit in Kentucky. Kentucky, naturally, is very big basketball country. Kentucky Wesleyan was very good in basketball. I remember one basketball game that was snowed out, and they rescheduled it. So one day, walking the hall, I saw this 84-year-old student. And I said to her, are you going to the makeup of the basketball game? You missed the first one. She said, oh, no, I can't go today. I said, why? She said, I would miss my bowling class. It's invigorating to see that spirit. And from a personal standpoint, my wife, Dr. Lightfoot, helped me get my degrees, helped the children get her degrees. And then finally she recognized it was her time. She got 1 year elsewhere, but when we moved to Gainesville, she started her education anew at Brunel.
Oh, great.
As a student at that time, well into her 40s, had completed her undergraduate degree, completed her teaching degree, her master's degree, and then spent 22 years teaching in the Hall County Public School system. If you ever wanted to talk to someone who's very grateful for how Brunel met her needs as an older adult student, she would be a great testimonial for you. What does Brunel do, either from an official standpoint or maybe just what other students do, to help what we'd call the non-traditional older student fit into the mix?
Well, you know, the very first thing that, and you talk about trends and the changes since both of us really were students from the 60s through the 80s, you know, before, the concept of adult education was very limited. There were not a lot of programs that were out there. So what's really happened, and your wife is exactly the kind of person that we're there for, and we continue to be there for. I'm an adult learner in two of my degrees as well. I went back. And so, you know, access. What we do is we provide access, first and foremost. And we make courses available that are convenient to the learner, regardless of age, regardless of where they're at in their career and all that sort of stuff. That's the number one thing. And that is something that, you know, we can argue politics over our federal government, but one of the great things that the American government has done for our students and for our higher educational system is to provide inexpensive loans through particularly the Stafford Loan Program that has enabled people to go back, get a degree that has repositioned them, and ultimately, usually for many, many people, does pay off in the long run in terms of helping them to realize their career aspirations and perhaps most importantly, increasing their earning capacity. So access is the number one thing that we do.
In a small private college, and I've been in both. My graduate degrees were from Ohio University. So I've been in the large public institution. And as an administrator, I worked for both public and private colleges. In the small private college, would it be accurate to say that academic aid for students, financial aid, is even more of an opportunity than it is in the large public institutions?
I would say so. I'm not as familiar with the whole financial aid scenario, perhaps, as I should be, but I do think that the thing that you will find at a smaller private institution, and recognize Brunel is not a newcomer to adult education. Brunel has been in adult education for going on 40 years or even more. So we go back to the 1970s when we first got into it. What we do is we help work with each student to the best of our ability to put together a package that'll work for them. Part of that package is financial aid. Part of it is a pathway towards securing that degree that they're shooting for. Part of it is to recognize their undergraduate credits that they've accumulated, even things like experiential credit, you know, where somebody mm-hmm. may have mm-hmm. through the military or through different positions that they've had, you know, they may have certain leadership credits that we can give them or certain other kinds of credits that we can give them. And so we will take a look at their portfolio.
Again, that's getting out of the ivory
yep.
tower.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep. And you have to do that. You have to recognize that each student brings something different to the table.
Everything is not learned in a classroom setting. We're going to get back to our interview after Christina Rhodes talks a little bit about our current guest and about the program, gives us a couple of public service announcements afterwards. And Dr. Lightfoot, when we come back, Christina has a question that she wants to ask you as we continue our interview. Christina?
Listeners, thank you for tuning in this morning to the Communication Corner here on WBCX 89.1 FM, the voice of Brenau. WBCX broadcasts this informative interview program on Tuesdays live at 9 a.m., and a rebroadcast Thursdays at 6 a.m. Today, your host, Dr. Bill Lampton, is interviewing Dr. Bill Lightfoot, Dean of the College of Business and Mass Communication, right here at Brenau University. And let me remind you that the entire podcast of this interview will appear on Dr. Lampton's blog later on today, along with a photo of him with Dr. Lightfoot. The link to Dr. Bill's blog you can get at thecompletecommunicator.com. Again, if you're writing that down, that's thecompletecommunicator.com. Listeners, stick with us. We'll take just a short break.
To contact WBCX, you can call 770-538-4744, or you can visit us on the web via Facebook, Twitter, and our website at brenau.edu/WBCX.
My name is Sue Smith. I'm 38 years old, and I work at a graphic design company, which is funny because I couldn't even draw a stick figure when I was a kid. But I met someone who told me, you know what, you can do anything. And if the teenage me were here, she'd tell you,
I wouldn't be into drawing and art if it wasn't for big brothers, big sisters. Most kids from my neighborhood don't get into art. They get into trouble. But I was lucky because my big sister showed me early on that I didn't have to be like most people. And to the young me,
that meant a lot. My big sister's name is Sheila, and Sheila is the reason that this 8-year-old grows up to have an amazing job as a graphic designer.
Whether you donate money or time, you're helping big brothers, big sisters help a child, and that can last a lifetime. Start something today at bigbrothersbigsisters.org. Brought to you by Big Brothers Big Sisters and the Ad Council.
Senior Issues is a radio show devoted to promoting quality issues to help our seniors maintain or improve their quality of life. Also, the show could help those with seniors in their family be aware of the various issues that would affect both them and their loved ones. Showtime is 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. every Thursday, and yes, we are live. We will cover a wide range of subjects over the course of time. If you have a subject that you would like discussed, or if you know of an event that our listening audience should be aware of, call me at 770-380-9727. This is Charles White, Certified Senior Advisor. I hope that we can add you to our listening audience.
Extraordinary Lives from Brenau University.
6 months ago, I got blindsided by my company. They called me in, laid me off, and sent me packing with just 2 weeks severance. Walking out that door, I said, this will never happen to me again. The first thing I did, enroll at Brenau University. The economy may be in shambles, but at Brenau, I'm putting my career together in time for the recovery. Today, I'm earning my degree in business so I can start my own. The first test of my business savvy, choosing a school as reputable and affordable as Brenau. With my Brenau degree, I'm ready for the next chapter in my life, the extraordinary life.
Now with two Atlanta campuses, Norcross and Fairburn, as well as Gainesville and online, register at gobrenau.com. That's GOBRENAU.com. Brenau University, extraordinary lives.
Hi, I am Ricardo Boyer, host of Embracing Health. Every Friday at noon, we talk about various topics related to your health and well-being. empowering you to make positive changes in your life. So, join me Fridays at noon here on 89.1 WBCX, the voice of Brenau.
My name is Richard Washington, and this is my American story. I see a great need in my community. I live in Harlem, and I watch the children as they go along. I see a lot of issues that they have to deal with. I work with children who are on probation, and that's the population that I'm interested in focusing on because I think there's a great need for them to have someone in their corner. I think retired people have a lot to offer because we have life experience, we have work experience. Very often we've raised our children already. And so we have those insights that we can bring to the table. And we have the flexibility of working in an area that we choose.
Every one of us has a role to play in making our communities and our country stronger. Discover yours. Help us continue to make a difference in the life of our nation. Go to serve.gov and find the opportunity that works for you. This message is brought to you by the Corporation for National and Community Service.
Hello and welcome to the second half of the Communication Corner. I'm your host, Dr. Bill Lampton, with my guest, another Dr. Bill Lightfoot, Dean of the College of Business and Communication Skills at Brenau University in Gainesville, Georgia. And just before the break, I mentioned that my co-host, Christina Rhodes, has a question for Dr. Lightfoot. Christina?
I do, Bill. I was going to actually ask about the Prepare to Be Lucky. I'm so glad that you talked about that because that's something that you taught me that I really feel is really valuable. I love that, and I think it really applies to higher education because that's kind of what it's all about, is you preparing yourself to be lucky later in life. So thank you for discussing that. What I want to ask you is, you've mentioned that you've lived and worked overseas quite extensively, so how would you compare the U.S. higher education approach to what you've experienced elsewhere in the world?
I think overall we have the best higher educational system globally, period.
That's pretty good.
So I say that sincerely. We've got a lot of problems in education. I think it's a challenge anytime you have a large entity. We've got over 300 million people. We've got tremendous diversity in terms of things like language skills and cultural frames of references and the kind of support networks that are in place within families and society. So we've got lots and lots of challenges. And yet when you get to higher education in particular, again, I go back to my comment about access. The great thing about our system is that we have over 4,000 regionally accredited institutions of a variety of different sizes, from the size like Dr. Bill Lampton's alma mater, Millsaps, 800 to 1,000 or so students, excellent education. The kids that go to those kind of schools are extremely lucky. Same as Brenau's Women's College. It's a small, small community. We get to know our students personally. We can tailor the educational experience, not just the classroom, but the overall experience to fit the needs of the student. We can push them in ways that they haven't been pushed before in an effort to prepare them for that future. And yet, on the other hand, you've got community colleges. We've got Gainesville State down the road. You've got technical schools, Lanier Tech down the road. These schools are doing a fantastic job of providing opportunities that enable upward mobility for a variety of different people. Not everybody wants to necessarily sit down and read a book and talk about it and discuss, you know, abstract concepts. You have people that are great with their hands and they want to learn how to be the best mechanic or the best electrical engineer or the best at whatever it is that they want to do. And the cool thing about our system is not only do we have a wide variety of educational opportunities available to students supported by our government, but you can also do that at any age. You can go back. During the break, Bill and I were talking about some of the people that we've met that have inspired us. Whether it's the 84 seems to be a common age, but the 84-year-old student that for the pure pleasure of education has decided to go back and pursue a degree, or the 57-year-old doctor who decides, hey, I want to shift my focus for the next 15, 20 years or so. You know, it really points to something in our culture that, you know, is so critical that it should give us all hope, especially in a tough time like we've had for the last few years. And that hope is that, you know, we're resilient and we can reinvent ourselves And we can reinvent ourselves through higher education. And thank God that it's available. Thank God that the government supports that. Thank God that we've got a culture that enables people of different ages to go back. Because that's not true. When we lived in France for 5 years, the general feeling you had is that by the age of 12, you started to be tracked into a certain educational focus. And by the age of 26, your education was over. And you did find exceptions to that. That's not a hard, fast rule. But you had this great sense that by 26, and certainly if not 26, then by the end of your 20s, you had to have your path set, and that was it until you retired. That is not the way we operate in the U.S.
You were mentioning during the break so many different people in their 60s or 70s change career paths and get advanced degrees, and the opportunities here sound like they're unique then.
There's no upper limit on education. There's no upper limit. And you can continue to learn. Again, it's formal and informal. I'm not necessarily promoting a degree because a degree is not for everybody. I'm promoting the idea that you should have that natural curiosity that Bill referred to earlier, and that you should be a lifelong learner. Be biased towards learning.
Well, I think many of the studies of people we read about in retirement, the ones who last a long time, live a long time, are those who continue to develop new interests. So many people that I've known in different situations would retire and they had only 1 year of life left. Why? Because the highlight of the day was, honey, has the evening paper arrived yet? Or what's on television tonight? As long as you have something to challenge you, as long as you, as you put it, want to keep on learning, that's what education really is all about. In fact, I've often made the statement that I think the term continuing education is a misnomer, because if your education isn't continuing of your own free will and volition, you never had any education.
Absolutely. You know, you just have to always look for opportunities to continue to extend yourself, I think, and it makes life a lot more interesting. You know, the other thing that I've also realized is that the more you learn, the more you realize how little you know. The amount of information that's out there, for one, you know, it's obvious to see through the internet that there's just an incredible amount of information that is now easily accessible. A lot of it is not great information. A lot of it may be false, but there's access to information and access through technology to connect with people from a wide variety of different backgrounds and cultures and linguistic groups, etc. So there's almost no excuse anymore not to be a lifelong learner.
Absolutely. It's more accessible and it's more interesting and it's more fun now than it was. Christina brought up the fact of your international experience. Talk to us a little bit about what you do in the different countries that you've worked in. I notice Helsinki, Finland. I notice Guatemala, Monaco, India. What are some of your activities there?
Well, I guess I'm always looking to make connections. I'm always looking to make connections that, one, are personally interesting, but more significantly, can somehow add value to the experiences that we have here on campus. And when I say on campus, I use a loose definition of that because, as you probably know, Brunel has a very substantial online presence as well as regional campuses as well. And so, you know, what I'm constantly looking for is ways in which we can bring the world into the classroom or bring the classroom to the world. And there's really three primary sectors that I think are critical for the next 50 years that have sort of motivated me to get outside of my shell a little bit. In terms of travel. One is China, which is pretty obvious. India, which is another country that would be pretty obvious. Both those countries have over 1.2 billion people. They are just very significant players economically and politically and otherwise. And then the third area that I think is extremely critical if you live in the southern part of the U.S. is Central and Latin America. And so I've been very fortunate to have made connections through Brunel or prior to Brunel in each of those three different sectors. My base, because we lived there for 5 years, is Europe. We're very fortunate. This is part of that prepare to be lucky adage to have lived in the French Riviera for 5 years, three of those years in the Principality of Monaco, which is where we worked at a small business university. One of my students, Thomas Curtin, set up a business in Finland. He's Finnish. And he, I provided some advice and consulting to him in the early stages about how he ought to structure it and helped make some connections. And in 2006, my own career in Monaco had shifted a little bit. So I had some opportunity to join him and ultimately join him as a minority partner in his business. Ended up going to Finland. I guess I've been there 13 or 14 times. I've been to Dubai a couple of times on behalf of them, doing a variety of different executive education kind of programs. And I'm starting to do a little bit of that in Guatemala with a connection down there, and occasionally get invited to give lectures in different parts of the world as well. So, you know, I'm very fortunate, very blessed to have connections, plus a bias towards establishing and developing more connections that then set up the possibility for anything from just having case studies that I can bring into the classroom to talk about with my students, to bring my students there. We've had trips that have gone to China or that have gone to Guatemala. And also, in some cases, like in the case of China in particular, bringing students here through the connections that I've got that enrich our campus community in a lot of different ways and stretch us and push us in different ways that are very, very important to set up the next 50 years.
Let me get back to that in just a second. Christina is going to give us a station ID and also talk about next week's guest.
You're tuned into 89.1 WBCX, the voice of Brunau, and you're listening to the Communication Corner hosted by Dr. Bill Lampton, who's interviewing Dr. Bill Lightfoot, Dean of the College of Business and Mass Communication here at Brunau University. You'll want to be with us next week for a most unusual topic. Dr. Bill Lampton will be interviewing Karen Chase, a professional storyteller based in Freetown, Massachusetts. Storytelling becomes a big part of our lives as children, and our love of a good story never stops. Yet most of us have never talked to a full-time professional storyteller, so we can expect a fascinating hour. And now for the closing quarter hour of Dr. Bill's interview with Dean Lightfoot.
Christina, you'll like the ID that Karen Chase uses, Storybug.
I like that. And listeners of WBCX may really like to tune into that because we have a storyteller here at WBCX that has a kids show on Saturday morning.
Ah.
So that'll be very welcomed here.
Yes. Well, Karen is someone I've known through the Internet for quite a few years, have not met her in person. Again, Dr. Lightfoot, this is the power of our connected world, as you would put it. I say that Brunau is extremely fortunate to have someone bring to the campus time and time again the global perspective that you bring. 35 or 40 years ago, about all that a kid knew about geography was when the teacher brought a globe into the room and they spun the globe around and they would point out, here's Guatemala, or here's India, or here's China. And everybody would say, yes, so what? But you bring real life experiences. We truly, as an institution, Brunau University, we recognize, in fact, an obligation to prepare students before they graduate for a vast international experience. They never know where they're going to be. They never know who they're going to be working with or for, who their clients, who their employers will be. It's very likely to be international, isn't it?
Absolutely. And if it's not actually living overseas, it's working with people from different cultures. That's the big thing. And they may be people that have moved into the U.S. They may be people that live here but come from a different part of the country. It's developing an empathy, and it's developing an understanding of how to connect with people and you know, a bit of an open mind, because through our interactions with other people, that's also how we learn. And I think that's perhaps the most powerful lessons come through those interactions. You know, and that's the beauty of a liberal education as opposed to an education that's just focused on, for example, engineering or math or something else. It's the exposure to a lot of different concepts and ideas that allows you to make those connections with other people. You're a former sales guy. I'm a former sales guy. One of the things that you learn when you're going through your sales training is to try and pick up on the things that link you to that other person. It can be walking into an office and looking at photos on a wall or on a desk. It can be looking at the way they're dressed. It can be looking at their diplomas or their degrees. What kind of car do they drive? You're trying to make a connection with other people. And that's the thing that I found through my global travels and my interactions with a lot of other folks is, you know, we're very similar in many, many ways. We see the differences. We hear the differences. But when we sit down together and break bread, literally, we start to learn that we have a lot of things in common. And when you start to look at things that way and say, look, we're all on this planet together, then I think you have a chance for actually developing a good, strong relationship. I think you have a chance for, if business is what you're trying to do, then I think you have an opportunity to do some business. You've got to develop that rapport. That's the base for developing trust. Once you've got trust, then you've got an opportunity to do virtually anything together.
The old saying that people do business with those they know, like, and trust.
Absolutely. And if we're really trying to live to the spirit of our mission, then we've got to find a way to encourage more interaction with a variety of different people. We want our graduates to be adaptable to whatever situation that they're in. We want them to have enough of an open mind so that they can make connections with a wide variety of people.
Dr. Lightfoot, talk with us a little bit, please, about the College of Business and Communications that you had at Brenau University. What's involved with it? What do you currently offer? And what are your maybe immediate goals that you'd like to see the college move toward?
Well, our College of Business and Mass Communication, we have about 950 students or so. About 920 are in the business administration area, spread out between the Women's College here in Gainesville, North and South Atlanta, Augusta, Kings Bay Naval Base, and then also online. The students in the business administration area are in bachelor's degree programs in HR, organizational leadership, accounting, and business administration. We also have a marketing concentration that we've brought back. And then we've got MBA programs that are in international business. We have an insurance program that's affiliated with AICPU, one of the big insurance underwriting accrediting bodies. We have project management associated with PMI. We're a registered education provider for Project Management Institute. We have a HR major in our MBA. We also have an accounting major that helps students prepare for CPA or CMA examination, and also healthcare management, which is one of our larger majors in the MBA. And then we have the Master of Science in Organizational Leadership. On the mass communication side, we have an undergraduate program in the Women's College here in Gainesville that has done an amazing job over the last 30 or 40 years of preparing students for big-time careers. I mean, we have producers at CNN. We have anchors on both radio and TV. We have editors. We have a wide variety of different people. What we're
Christina Rhodes will be there one day, won't she?
Christina Rhodes is already there. She's already there. So, you know, some of our immediate goals for the future, well, we're always looking at ways in which we can improve the quality of the experience for our students. So that's, you know, I've understood since I got an education that really there's two things that are required to make sure that there's a good level of education in the classroom. That's dedicated faculty members and committed students. And so a lot of what I try to do as an administrator is try to think through what can we do to make sure that the educational experience between our faculty and students is at the best level possible. It's always a challenge. We're a fairly good-sized college, all things considered, and we do have a lot of part-time faculty that we work through. And because of the online education, some of them are even outside this country. And so communicating with them is something that you have to do constantly and accurately in order to make sure that they understand exactly what we're trying to do. So it's a good challenge. We are looking at certain areas in the mass communication area. They've been putting more and more emphasis on digital media, social media. There's a concept of convergent media or new media that's also floating out there. So we're constantly challenging ourselves to look at ways in which we can reinvigorate and revitalize and make sure that when our graduates leave Brunel, that they are ready day one to step in and start adding value into whatever work environment they're in. And, that's one of our goals, is to make sure that we can help them accomplish that.
Well, the College of Business and Mass Communications is incredibly comprehensive in its offerings for this size institution.
It is. And yet, you know, one of the other big areas that we also are constantly striving to do, and we've made some good headway in the last few years, is really making sure that we leverage all the resources available at Brunel. So it's not just things we do in our own college. It's how we connect to the College of Fine Arts and Humanities, how we connect to the College of Health and Science, how we connect to the College of Education. So we're constantly working on interdisciplinary focuses that take advantage of the liberal education that we offer. You cannot have successful leaders, not just business leaders, but leaders, unless they have the ability to connect to other people. The best kind of successful leaders are those that have a liberal education preparation. They understand a broad range of subjects. They can make connections with a variety of people. They can build that rapport and establish that trust that's so critical towards leadership.
This is something I noticed, again, in reading your bio, is that while you were an engineering student, you definitely, early on, saw the great value of a liberal arts education.
I went to Bucknell University for my electrical engineering program. Bucknell is a great gem of higher education in central Pennsylvania. We used to fondly refer to it as the middle of nowhere. But it was really founded as a liberal education institution. Over time, it developed one of the better undergraduate engineering programs in the country. It also has a strong business program, as well as some other strong programs. But what I really valued were the courses that I took outside of my engineering degree. Those are the courses and subjects that really stretched me in a lot of different ways. And I would purposely try to take a variety of different courses in a variety of different areas because I started to develop a curiosity. I started to develop a lifelong passion for reading and a lifelong passion for the arts and other things. So I learned, fortunately, at 17, 18 years old, to embrace the ideals of a liberal education, and I have been attracted to institutions that espouse those ideals ever since.
We're down to our last couple of 3 minutes. We've had a terrific review of how you developed your early work ethic and how this continued so that you're not an ivory tower professor or administrator. You bring all of that to the classroom. We've talked some about your international experience. We've reviewed what your department offers and what you see happening in the future. What would you like to add to make sure we don't leave out something important that you'd like our listeners to know?
I think there's two other things that stand out to me that are a part of my life that I really try to personally be engaged in. One is entrepreneurship. I just think you can be an entrepreneur in any size company or on your own. And when I say that, it's really the mentality. And what that ties to specifically is adding value and seeking opportunities to innovate, maybe improve the way things are done. That's a constant. It can be stressful because you're inducing change when you're doing that. But ultimately, if done well, it can be successful in helping improve something.
And this is where you and I were talking about the book Blue Ocean Strategy, which I think you would probably recommend.
Absolutely. It's a great book that gives you a framework for really identifying how you can differentiate yourself in a sustainable way. The second area is service. And I think, you know, I do a lot of things in the community with Think and Georgia Mountain Food Bank, Junior Achievement, and other organizations. And there's always opportunities to link in students. And again, it's making connections with people that you normally would not connect with to develop that empathy.
Dr. Bill Lightfoot, this has been a most intriguing and most informative time. We appreciate it so much. Thank you very much for being with us. In closing, this is the Communication Corner on WBCX 89.1 on your dial, the voice of Brunel. I'm your host,
Dr. Bill Lampton. Contact me at the station, 770-538-4744, or my business phone, 678-316-4300. Thanks for being with us today.